You ready for some coffee, honey?
Absolutely.
I'll pour.
Great coffee. I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
And we are Talking
While Married.
Well, it's great to join you this evening on this extremely cold evening in Texas. How are you?
I'm good. It is very chilly. We dropped from 68 yesterday to 35 today, so that's kind of crazy.
Well, I was working all day today, but I had to come back just a little bit early because there was some work going on at the ranch, and you stayed here all day doing some work. So now we get to join together and talk about the events that are going on in this nation.
Lots of things going on, as usual.
Hey, I want to start out, and I want to start talking about the President of the United States' State of the Union and what the Democratic response was. Well, first of all, I wanted to say that I thought it was an amazing speech. I have listened to a lot of State of the Union addresses, and I thought this was by far one of the best I've ever heard.
I agree with you. It was really good, and I actually am surprised with all of the people that have Trump derangement syndrome, that 76% of the country agree with that, that it was a very, very good speech.
And I saw that poll too, and that was an open poll, which means it wasn't a Democrat or a Republican poll, wasn't a conservative or a liberal poll. It was just a poll of everybody, Democrats, Republicans, Libertarians, Independents, and the vast majority, at least the three quarters of the country, enjoyed what President Trump had to say.
Yeah, you know, what I liked about it is that it was pretty uncontroversial. Even though he talked about all of his accomplishments, he didn't gloat over them and talk about them as his doing. He talked about them, as you and I spoke about, as America's successes.
And I thought that was very, very well done. And, you know, knowing Trump, and every other president, I naturally assumed that he was going to say a lot. Well, my administration did this, and my administration did that. And that isn't what he said at all. I mean, he mentioned that a couple of times, but far and away it was, look at what we, the American people, have accomplished working together. And I just thought that was fantastic. I didn't see anything controversial about the speech. What I found controversial, and I know we watched that speech together, was how the Democrats responded to that on television, which I thought was just completely disgraceful and unwarranted.
Well, I think it was, and I think that America sees that. And here's what's interesting, Ron, is that you and I are just two Americans, and we watched that speech just like everybody else did. So we had no, you know, previous information. We're privy to nothing. We watch it like every American did. So I'm sure that many, many people had the same reaction as we did. And as a woman, I was really insulted by the women in white, and I wrote an article about it actually that night. I couldn't go to bed until I wrote an article about that because I was very insulted that they pre-planned to have these mad and angry-looking faces to not applaud for the president, no matter what he said, no matter how good of something he said for America, they would not honor that. No matter who he introduced and their accomplishments in life.
And their stories.
And their stories and their heroism. They were just going to stand there and have mad faces. I just found that really insulting. And, of course, Nancy Pelosi was like the puppet master up there with her hand signals telling them when to stand, when to sit. You know, no, don't get up right now. And, I mean, we all saw that. It was disrespectful to the president. It was very trite of those women. And I think that most of America must agree with the way that I saw it because how could you not agree with that?
Well, I knew you had a burr under your saddle because I was in bed with you, and you went to bed late, and then you went to sleep for a couple hours, and then about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, you were up again, dragged your computer into bed, and you were just typing away while I was trying to get to sleep. But I totally get it, Linda, and I looked at it as women in straight jackets. They were in white jackets, but they were in straight jackets. And the reason I say that is for exactly the same thing that you talked about. And by the way, compliments on the article, because it went viral that afternoon. As soon as you put that thing out, it just went kabam, and it was all over the place. And I had a lot of friends messaging me back, congratulating you for a wonderful article. But I saw those women in straight jackets. And so to me, everything was incongruent. Okay, and I have a hard enough time understanding women as it is, but these women are supposed to be leaders, not only in the political community, but in the, you know, their own communities, and that's why they get elected to these offices. And they can't do anything without looking at the puppet master, Nancy Pelosi, and, you know, making a decision on whether they're going to stand and applaud over something that was non-controversial, something very positive for the United States of America, and had nothing to do with politics. And they sat on their hands. And it just, and by the way, I don't want to just make this a gender-based thing. All the men were standing on their hands as well. Come on, just because the President of the United States is giving the State of the Union address doesn't mean that you sit on your hands when he's saying things that are positive for America and apolitical.
You know, I almost don't even care if they sit. I expect that from them. But what I didn't like, again, as a woman, is I didn't like the women all looking like clones of one another and acting like clones of one another. I would have hoped that these women would have gone into a new job that they just got and, you know, use their sense of individuality to be who they are, to represent the people of their district. By the way, when you're voted in, you're not voted in to represent only a certain amount of people. You're voted in to represent everybody in your area. So,
well, and everybody,
they're not doing that.
Well, let me, don't mean to interrupt you, but yes, you're right. They're there to represent the people in their congressional district, but in largesse, they are there to represent all of us Americans, because their votes matter, you know, with respect to how our lives are affected.
Yes.
So it isn't just when they vote for something, it isn't just for their congressional district. They are voting on national policies and national projects.
And what they've done is they've come into Congress like a tornado with an agenda. And, you know, I would have hoped that they would have taken some time to learn what's going on, the truth about things, go down to the border, talk to the Border Patrol, see what's actually happening, talk to people that live on the border, find out about things like child trafficking or all of the issues that President Trump brought up. And there was so many. Just take some time to learn so that you know the facts before you come in and you have an agenda and you don't even know what you're talking about. And that's how I saw this, is that these women, you know, they all want to stick together, but they shouldn't be sticking together. They're individuals. They work and represent different areas of our country who have different needs and different wants. And they should be having that individuality, I think.
Well, you know, and I agree with you. And I'm not going to pick on the women anymore, because I think you did a great job doing that. It's better coming from a woman than it is from a guy. But I want to talk about all of them, and I'll bring the Democratic men in there. I thought they were just absolutely disgraceful. They better have kept the videotape of all those Democrats sitting down on their hands and not standing up and applauding when President Trump said that America will never be a socialist nation. And I'm talking specifically about people like Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, Jackson Lee, all these people. It just was absolutely disgusting. And the leader of the Democrat congressional, you know, party in, you know, in the Congress, Nancy Pelosi, did not stand up and agree with the president. She just sat down and made sure that everybody else was sitting down too. If you're either for a socialist country or you're against America becoming a socialist country.
Well, they must be on the road to being for a socialist country, because Ocasio-Cortez just also had a press conference introducing her new green deal program.
Yeah, and I want to talk with you about that later.
Okay.
But you know what I want to do right now? I want to kind of transition into the discussion about the question to me that's pressing. And I saw the State of the Union address and the response by the Democrats as a turning point for America and Americans. And so my question is, just where do you think America is going into the future after this?
Well, I think none of us know, and I think that what where we are is we are at what Liz Wheeler always calls a tipping point in this country, and you can see this vast divide between one side and the other, and we're not coming together. And I think President Trump has really, really tried to bring people together. At least he did that evening. And we're not coming together. So there are more and more people, Ron, that are opining that they think that, you know, we may be headed towards a civil war in this country.
Oh, boy, you just took my thunder right out of the sky. And I agree with
you.
That's my job. Well, you know, here's the thing. I thought that President Trump did a wonderful job extending the olive branch.
Yes.
You know, asking, hey, let's negotiate, you know, let's let bygones be bygones here. I know we have disagreements, but we're all adults or should be adults, and let's see if we can work this out. Let's see if we can cross the aisle, and let's see if we can work things out with respect to, you know, immigration and national, strategy with regards to national security and international security and all of these, and the drug epidemic and human trafficking and all of these problems that we're having in the United States. These are all solvable problems. And as I've said many times in our coffee conversations, none of this stuff is rocket science. And he threw that, you know, he presented that olive branch. And what did they do in return? They threw down the war gauntlet. So people like me, and I know like you and like many of our friends that we've been checking in with, we were angry and frustrated and disgusted by that, because to us it shows that the Democrats and the Democrat socialists and the new progressives are unwilling to meet this president halfway, and they are not at all concerned about the divide in this country. And as a matter of fact, they want to increase the divide.
Well, they do want to increase the divide because the chaos helps their purpose. So, and you know, it's something that I'd like to talk about further because, Saul Alinsky wrote about this.
Well, so I'm not the only person that feels this way. There are a lot of my friends and colleagues and our friends and colleagues that feel the same way. That they are extremely concerned that the divide in this nation will never be healed, and we will never be a united country again. And one of my friends, who I've known for many, many years, and he's a very normal, well-rounded person, who happens to be a libertarian. As a matter of fact, of all the conversations I've ever had with him, we never discussed, you know, what political persuasion he was. And he posted on Facebook today that he was a libertarian. And he expressed the frustration about how you can't trust the Democrats to do the right thing, you can't trust the Republicans to do the right thing, and they are just against the American people. And government is taking such an increasing control over our lives with everything they do. And I have to agree with that. Now, I'm not a libertarian, I'm a conservative, a common sense conservative. But it bothers me that the people are bothered.
Well, people definitely are bothered. And, you know, I've also had conversations with friends, and how do you bridge this gap? And the thing is that at this point, nobody knows how to bridge it anymore. We're so far apart that it's a very difficult, you know, it's like that, a bridge too far. You know, I don't know how we're going to get there, but we really need to work at it. And I still believe, Ron, that there's more people in this country that feel the way that we do than not, but we're not the loud ones. The loud ones are the more radical on the left and the media, because the media only talks about that one side. But I still believe that more of America believes the way that we do. It's just that we are kind of a silent majority, and at some point we can't afford to be a silent majority anymore.
Well, I completely agree with you. And what bothers me about the increasing socialist agenda in this country, as expressed by so many people that are Democratic politicians and the new progressive left, and headed by people like, you know, Bernie Sanders and, you know, Ocasio-Cortez and now Cory Booker and, you know, some of these other people. And what bothers me about that is they tend to get a lot of the ignorant and uninformed voters behind them, and the entitled people, and the people that want something for nothing. And so every time that you offer people that are on welfare, and by the way, voluntarily on welfare, because they will not go out and work. They would rather sit home and collect welfare benefits and all this free stuff. If you keep offering them free stuff, they're not going to turn it down. And you enable them instead of empowering them, and it just makes the socialist agenda grow larger. But the thing that bothers me is that the press, the very protectors of our freedom, agree with these people.
They're complicit.
And they forget that the press is the first thing that is suppressed in a socialist government, in a communist government. Even the National Socialist Government, which was the Nazi regime, they were the first people that were suppressed. If you go to Venezuela, it is a suppressed press. It is not a free press. If you go to Russia, it is a suppressed press, not a free press. If you go to Cuba, it is a suppressed press, not a free press.
Yes, but I think that either they're not paying attention or they haven't studied history. And again, you know, history will teach us the way that we need to go, and we are totally ignoring the rules that history teaches us.
Well, the reason that nobody is gaining anything from the rules that history teaches is because they're deliberately not teaching civics.
Yes.
And history. So how the heck do they know what happened historically, you know, 50 years ago, 70 years ago, you know, 75 years ago? They have no idea of what is being taught because we don't teach it.
The thing that's really confusing to me is why we would even go in this direction when every single example you can point to in history will tell you that it's a bad direction.
Tired of watching the same old sporting events? Well, kick it up a notch and get ready, America, for something you've never seen before. It's the new generation of Western superstars. Shorty Gorham's American freestyle bullfighting. Who will win? The acrobatic, tough-as-nails Western superstar or the meanest half-ton fighting bulls on Earth? This is one of the most extreme sports you'll ever see in an arena. This is hand-to-horn combat on a level playing field. Go to ShortyGorhamAFB.com or find them on Facebook. It's bullfighting time.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Well, Ron, the Democrats have just, you know, brought out their Green New Deal plan. And the plan includes a way to, you know, make sure that everybody in the country has a livable wage. It has Medicare for all, free health care for all, free education for all. What else does it have? It has...
Well, it's got getting rid of fossil fuels within the next 10 years, making air travel obsolete, They're going to go to bullet trains. And I thought it was very interesting that the senator that we like, that the Democratic senator that we don't like, she's agreeing with everything until the reporter said, well, wait a minute, it's going to make air travel obsolete. How are people going to get to Hawaii? And all of a sudden she stopped talking and she had a deer in the headlight look.
I know.
But you know what? And let me finish what you were saying. Give economic security to everyone, even those people unwilling to work. What does that mean? That means giving them free money. And so essentially, it's a socialist wish list. But I like what Nancy Pelosi called it. She called it, and I'm quoting here, the Green Dream, or whatever they call it.
Right.
So and she's not even engaged.
No, and she said, I'm sure it's one of many proposals that will come in. But so many of these Democratic presidential wannabes have jumped on this train, which is, by the way, I guess all that we'll have is trains, because if we can't have planes, I'm not sure how you're going to get to Europe and the far corners of the world. But, you know, this is just brought up by somebody, Ron, who I can't get over, was a bartender a few months ago, who was evicted from her apartment because she couldn't pay her own bills several times.
Who had a 400 credit score.
Yes. And, you know, this person purports to know what's best for the country. And another part of this is that they want to get rid of billionaires. And I'm not sure where they're going to get their money to do all these things if you don't have people making money to pay the money to do these things. This is so financially impossible, what they are talking about, that it's ludicrous. And why are we even talking about this? That we are a capitalist country, and we need to stay that way. And to have us looking at something like this, can you imagine how many people that they would be putting out of work here?
Well, let's just talk about fossil fuels and going 100% clean energy within 10 years. There are 10 million people involved in the energy sector. 10 million people. What are you going to do about
those
10 million
people? They
want
to put them all in the federal government, which is, that's as scary as heck to me.
And they're not all going to work on wind farms and solar farms. You're getting rid of the infrastructure that America is based upon. All right, and we can't all be on electrical energy, right? From wind and solar and
well, we don't have enough land or wind to even accomplish that.
No, whatsoever. And then also, one of the things that the United States is doing again is it's exporting energy. So it's exporting natural gas. It's exporting oil. It's exporting gas. And to countries that really need it.
Well, I want to say something about that since you brought it up. Just as an aside, that domestic oil production in the United States is just expected to explode over the next decade as other countries are struggling to produce it and we are excelling at it. And this is a President Trump promise kept.
Oh, it is. This never happened under the Obama administration. All these people that were in fossil fuel industry were all on welfare or working other jobs. Trump single-handedly, except for, you know, members of his administration, but single-handedly made us energy independent again. And now we're going to become energy dependent again? I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And again, like you said, it's a bartender is one of the major people calling the shots. So, you know, let me ask you something. We're talking about green energy and all of that stuff. But do you think that the reason that people like Cortez, who's, like I said, a bartender with a bad credit score, is now taking such a prominent place in the Democratic Party, is it the Democratic Party now trying to attract the young people? Is that where this is, and they're trying to take the dinosaurs like Pelosi and Schumer and people, maybe even Maxine Waters, and push those people out to pasture, and all of a sudden they are going to rally around people like Cory Booker and Ocasio-Cortez and a couple of those Muslim gals
that got elected? I think that that's part of it. The other part of it with Ocasio-Cortez is several fold. One is that she's very cute and she...
In your opinion?
Well, she commands the camera, so she has a presence that the camera likes, and the media love her,
which is a big deal. I have to give it to her. She's a social media maven.
Right.
She got over 2 million followers.
So that's the deal, and that's what this generation is looking at. And that she also beat a dinosaur in the Democratic Party. That was a big deal, too.
But you know what? She would have never beat that guy if that guy hadn't have taken care of business.
Well, you're right.
And he was taking care of business, but he was taking care of his own business and not the people's business. And by doing that, it gave her an opportunity to jump in there.
Right. So, you know, we are going upwards in the production of domestic oil and domestic natural gas, and very much so that we are not only producing our own, we are exporting it. But I want to talk to you because we just said what this new deal was about: healthcare for all, free education for all, welfare for all, basically. And you know, if you look back at the list that Saul Alinsky created some years ago, of the 8 steps that it takes to change a free capitalist country into one of government-controlled socialism, let's compare and contrast to the Green New Deal, Ron.
Yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so the first thing is control health care and you control the people.
I've heard that before.
That is exactly what they want to do with free Medicare for all. They don't want you to get your own health care. They want you to be dependent on the government to get it, and then they control you. Number 2 was increase the level of poverty. Poor people are easier to control. So when you get rid of all the billionaires, you get rid of all the income earners, and you do this income equalization as they want to do, then...
Oh, there's the dog.
Then... you know, you create a society with many more poor people, just like they did in Venezuela. And so this is how you control them. Number 3 is increase taxes. That is also in their plan. Increase the taxes on all people that are making a good wage. Increase it to 90% on people that are making a good amount of money. So billionaires, millionaires, increase it to 90%. So we're right on track with how to take a capitalist country and turn it into a socialist country. Number 4 falls right in, gun control. Remove the ability to defend yourselves the way that you are able to create that way.
Or prevent the government from coming over and taking over all the people and enslaving them.
Right. So when you take their guns away and they can't defend themselves, you create a police state.
And right? That's exactly what happened historically with the Nazis, with the fascists under Mussolini, and with the communists under both Stalin and Mao Zedong.
Right. And Cortez, she is on record as favoring gun control. And what you would end up with when you do that is that the only people that are going to have guns is the gangsters. Okay, so number 5, welfare. Control every aspect of a person's life. This is also in this Green New Deal. That control their school, control their medical, control their finances. So then people can't have a way to work themselves out of poverty in socialism, and they can't have a way to be rewarded for their efforts either. So this is right along this lines of a socialist manifesto. Number 6 is education. Again, right there in the Green New Deal. Take control of what people read and listen to, which we already know. 39% of colleges have 0 Republican professors.
You know, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind. That's why I don't even teach at the university anymore. And I used to love to teach, but the universities, for people that are conservative or simply just want to, you know, teach correctly, those people are ostracized off campus because it's all about entitled students. It's all about the opposite of free speech. It's all about, you know, speech that is controlled. If they don't like what you say, then all of a sudden it's hate speech, or it's speech that they don't like. I mean, there's all sorts of politically correct words for it, but it just makes teaching for experienced teachers just bad.
Well, and not only that, Ron, but when you were teaching and students didn't do the work and they didn't earn a grade and you didn't want to give them the grade, the schools wanted you to give them the grade because they paid the money to go to school, and absolutely incorrect.
We can do an entire Talking While Married just talking about the frustrations of school.
Yep. No, I agree. Well, back to Saul Alinsky and how we make a socialist state out of a capitalistic one is... religion. Remove the belief in God from government and schools. And we are doing a great job of that in this country with the ACLU suing over the crosses and the signs of religion, with the separations of church and state being taken to the nth degree. Religion is a part of life that separates civilized societies from non-civilized societies, and we are going in the wrong direction.
Yeah, you just...
And now, you know, we are willing in our country to murder babies at 9 months in the womb and just out of the womb, and the people that are going to defend that are going to be those that believe in God.
And, you know, this just goes back to what all my friends and colleagues are saying about a pending upheaval in the United States, because they are unwilling to tolerate a secular society where we practice such things as infanticide and uncontrolled drug use and free drug injection zones and all of this. You just can't do this to Americans in the flyover states. But I agree with what you're saying. The people that get all the press, because the press is complicit with where the new progressive left is going, the people in the flyover states are not going to tolerate this. And even some of the people in the more liberal blue states are not going to put up with it either. So you're going to see a change in this country, and it may not be a change that people want to see.
Well, I hope that we do. You know, and I want to be clear that when I say that the religious people are going to defend the right of that baby to live, so not defend the right to take the baby. The last thing that Saul Alinsky wrote about was about class warfare. And we're really starting to see that more and more in our country, where they divide the people into the wealthy and the poor, and they play them against each other constantly. We hear it in the media and from the Democrats day after day after day about how evil it is to be wealthy, how evil it is to work your fanny off, get your education, be creative, be entrepreneurial, make yourself some money, give people jobs, and you are demonized by the media and by the Democrats.
Well, and you're demonized for things that are just ridiculous, and people have got to put a stop to this. This whole conversation about white privilege is absolutely ridiculous. So white people that have, you know, worked, parents that have worked and put some money aside for their kids to go to school, those kids go to school, all of a sudden those kids graduate from school, they get some good job skills, and they get a job. All of a sudden, the only reason that they got to go to school and the only reason that they got to get a good job was because of white privilege. Now, you take a look at it, and successful blacks. Okay, so what happens with successful blacks? Well, they're Uncle Toms. Okay, because of why? All right, because they're successful. So the people that aren't successful put down the people that are successful. But who are the people that are heralded by the media? It's the people that are unsuccessful that are doing the whole identity politics and, you know, making all these ridiculous assertions about both white people and people of color that are successful.
Well, and according to a recent poll, a lot of millennials have said that they would prefer to live with socialism rather than capitalism. And that in itself speaks to something that is ignorant. So schools, only 20 states require that you even have one history test before you graduate from school. So, you know, they're not teaching history. They're not teaching the Constitution. They're not teaching the things that these kids need to know. So they think that socialism and all the entitlements sounds great, but they don't know what they're talking about. And that's where we're getting into trouble here. And this socialist manifesto from Saul Alinsky sounds exactly like the Green New Deal to me, and that's very, very scary.
Well, the Green New Deal is nothing but a regurgitation of failed democratic policies from the past. Let me give you a great example. A lot of these things are the Great Society under Lyndon Baines Johnson back in the 60s, all right, where we put trillions of dollars into people in communities and never got anything out of it because there was never a good game plan and there was never a judging of what constitutes a successful outcome as opposed to what is an unsuccessful outcome, and getting rid of programs that are unsuccessful and instead forwarding successful programs. So it's just walks down that same road. And, you know, you mentioned that they only have to take one history test. But I think for me, being in law enforcement my whole life, is that they don't teach civics in any of these states.
No.
You want to get civics classes, you've got to go to a private school. You've got to go to a charter school. You've got to go to a parochial school.
Which they are trying to get rid of
now. And of course they are.
Well.
Because, well, for many reasons. Number one, they want a secularist society. But number two, they don't want people to learn about government and, you know, the authority figures and who protects the rule of law. Who protects the rule of law? Law enforcement. Who protects a democratic society? Law enforcement. Who protects civil rights? Law enforcement. Who puts people in jail that violate laws that restrict freedoms of American? Law enforcement. Okay, and they don't want law enforcement, so they don't want to teach civics. But the unintended consequences of that, Linda, are that you have resistance to law enforcement, which then goes to resisting arrest, getting arrested, uses of force, you know, all the way up the line to uses of deadly force. It is not the fault of law enforcement. It is the fault of people who are uneducated in civics and the rule of law.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
I'm Dr. Ron Martinelli.
And I'm Linda Martinelli.
As former law enforcement officers, we know that your life and the lives of those you love and work with can change in an instant when you encounter an active shooter.
Unfortunately, in today's world of uncertainty, encountering an armed active shooter can have deadly consequences. That's why the key to survival is training and preparedness.
And that's why we want to invite our listeners to seriously consider taking our Response to Active Shooter training course.
Violence can happen to you anytime and anywhere, and when you least expect it. Having a response and survival plan and engaging it can be the difference between life and death for you or a family member.
Our Response to Active Shooter courses are customized for the corporate, school, church, restaurant, and small business environment at a reasonable budget that fits your needs.
So don't put this life-saving training off because you don't think it will ever happen to you. We call those people victims.
Our Response to Active Shooter instructors are all nationally renowned tactical law enforcement experts who will guide you through the life-saving protocols you'll need to survive an active shooter event.
So be a victor, not a victim. Go to ResponseToActiveShooter.com to learn more today.
Remember, that's all one word, ResponseToActiveShooter.com, and be safe out there.
I've got my last cup of coffee for the evening.
And me too.
Okay. You know, I thought we'd do something fun because schools are not teaching history as they used to. We both went to parochial school. We had a lot of civics and a lot of United States history, along with world history. And it's not really being taught anymore. So, you know, when the guys on the street, like Jesse Waters, walk around and they talk to the college students, they have no idea what's in our Constitution.
You know, that's embarrassing. And what is increasingly embarrassing is all of our different trips around the world. We always ask questions of the common man from other countries, and they tend to know more about the United States than we do.
Meaning,
United States people do.
And right? The United States Constitution. And it's really interesting because so many taxi drivers of different nationalities that we've talked to know our Constitution far better than our kids in America know it. It is embarrassing.
And that's really true because I remember when we were in Europe and we were in Budapest. Remember the guy that picked us up at the airport mm-hmm. and drove us to the riverboat? And he was from Serbia. I think he was.
Yes, he was from Serbia. Yes,
and he knew more about the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights than most Americans know.
Well, and so did the guy from, I think it was.
Was it the taxi driver from New York City that picked us
up?
Was he
from Mongolia?
LaGuardia?
He was from those mountains.
Oh, he was from the Himalayas.
The Himalayas. And then there was a driver that we had in Oklahoma who was Middle Eastern, and he knew far more about our Constitution. And what's interesting about all three of those particular drivers you just mentioned, they were all conservative.
Yeah, that was very interesting.
So I have a little quiz about the Constitution, and let's see what we remember from what we learned in parochial school.
What's this we stuff? You're going to ask the questions. I'm the guy that's got to give the answers.
Well, you know what? I don't know the answers either. So let's see what we both think, if we agree or disagree. Okay.
Old U.S. history teacher. Now I've got the spotlight on
me. Yep, you're under the fire here now. Okay. What was our country's first constitution called? Was it the Articles of Confederation, the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Paper, the Emancipation Proclamation?
No, that was the Articles of Confederation.
Absolutely. Number two, the laws for the United States are made by the President, the Senate, Congress, or the Supreme Court.
Well, most everybody should know this because these issues are constantly on television, and it's the Congress. Now, the United States Supreme Court enforces and makes rulings on those laws, but the Congress enacts those laws.
Right. Okay, so question number three is the longest possible time a person can now serve as president is 4 years, 8 years, 10 years, or 12 years?
Well, I believe it's 8 years, but there are extenuating circumstances in the case if the president dies in office.
Well, let's just use this example. If the something happens to the president and the vice president takes over, as long as he serves under 2 years or 730 days, he can then run for two more terms. But if he serves over 2 years or 730 days, he can only run for one more term.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. Okay. A man accused of a crime in court has a right to A, hear the witnesses against him, B, be tried wherever he wants, C, have any judge he wants, or D, change courts.
Well, that's pretty easy. He has a right to confront all witnesses against him.
That is correct. Ding, ding, ding. Okay, so invoking the Fifth Amendment means an accused man refuses to testify against himself or refuses to be tried again or demands a grand jury or wants to appeal his case.
Okay, well, it's actually the Fifth Amendment is a little bit more than that. First of all, he can invoke the Fifth Amendment during the interview process. He can invoke the Fifth and Sixth Amendment. Number one, not only saying, I don't want to talk, but I want counsel. But number two, if he goes to trial, he can, again, invoke the Fifth Amendment and not speak at all. Would you like to hear something interesting?
Yes.
Statistically, if a person invokes the Fifth Amendment during the police interview, and then never says another word and forces the government to make the case against him, which is the government's responsibility, not the defendant's, they get acquitted more often than not.
And that's because people tend to put their foot in their mouth a lot, right?
Perhaps. Or maybe the state doesn't have a very good case.
That could be too. Here's something a lot of people don't remember, Ron. Our first vice president was Alexander Hamilton, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, or John Adams?
Well, that's going to be easy because he was the first vice president. So it was John Adams who later became president. And the easy question is, who was he vice president under?
George Washington.
There you go.
Okay. Well, we have the Bill of Rights that is attached to our Constitution now. So the Bill of Rights is what? Is it the first 10 amendments, the 15th Amendment, the entire Constitution, or all of the amendments?
Oh, it's the first 10 amendments. That was the first Bill of Rights. And of course, we've had a whole bunch of amendments that have come down the pike after that.
Okay, well, if neither the president nor the vice president can serve, the position would then be filled by whom? Would it be the Speaker of the House, the Chief Justice, the elected President of the Senate, or the Secretary of State?
You know, I think it is the Speaker of the House.
It is the Speaker of the House, which would be, in this case, holy cow, Nancy Pelosi.
Oh my God. Hey, I've got a question for you. What does the term designated survivor mean?
Oh, well, that's the person that doesn't go to something that everybody else is at, and they hold him aside just in case something happens to everybody else. They have somebody that can serve.
Okay, and what is that thing that they hold that person back at? There's only one thing that happens a year that they have a designated survivor for.
The State of the Union Address.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, good for you.
Okay, so the major department head who is appointed by the president to deal with foreign countries is the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, the Attorney General, or the Secretary of Commerce?
Now, that's easy. It's the Secretary of State, and our Secretary of State is Mike Pompeo.
Yes, and I think he's doing an excellent job.
Doing a great job.
Yep. So the president is elected if he does what? If he wins a majority of the electoral votes, or wins most of the country's vote, or wins all of the state's votes, or wins most of the state's votes?
No, it's going to be if he wins the majority of the Electoral College votes, and that's what President Trump did this last election. And he did not win the general election, but he did win the majority of the Electoral College votes. Now, one thing that I want to bring up, and of course it's a political suggestion, is, but I would like to see in the Electoral College that changed where the votes become proportional. Because I don't know if people know that we have a number of states in the United States that are referred to as all or nothing states. And California, where we used to be from, happens to be one of them. If you win the majority of the population in each Electoral College area, you win all the votes in the state, so it's not proportional.
Yeah, I do wish they would do that. And you know what I would like to know is if they were proportional in the last election, what would the result have been?
Oh, I think Trump would have killed it.
Well, I don't know. I'd be interested to know. That would be really...
It. Do you remember, maybe I'm wrong, do you remember how many Electoral College votes he won in this last...
I do
which
not.
Was his first... I think it was something like 290, something like that. But it was a lot of Electoral College votes.
Yeah, that would be interesting to learn. And I don't like the all or nothing either myself. Okay, well, how many constitutions has the United States had? 1, 2, 3, or 4?
Well, that's pretty easy because I think we've kind of covered it already. We've had two. So the first one was the Articles of Confederation, and the second one was what we refer to now as our Constitution.
Exactly. Now, the role of Congress, Ron, is what? Is it to make laws, enforce laws, interpret laws, or all of the above?
No, it's to make laws.
Absolutely. Which means that they ought to get out of it trying to enforce and interpret them.
Well, who does that?
Well, the courts are doing...
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Although the courts, the activist courts, are trying to make laws, so we're just all confused here.
Okay, and so the court that makes the final determinations for all the laws that go through the federal court system...
That's after you get through 20 other appellate courts, right?
Right, and district courts, right? District courts of appeal.
Well, I know you're going to know this one because we actually just talked about it. What are the first 10 constitutional amendments called?
The Bill of Rights.
The Bill of Rights. So in the United States, a person can be convicted of treason only if, what? The jury finds probable cause, or there are at least two witnesses to the same act, or the person confesses in court, or the person has been compelled to testify against him or herself, or both A and B.
Okay, well, it's going to be B, because you can't be forced to testify against yourself. So I would go with the two witnesses.
There are at least two witnesses to the same act, or the person confesses in court.
Agreed.
Bonus question?
Bonus question would be, who was the last person or persons to be convicted of treason in the United States? Tick, 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 tick.
Oh,
tick,
you want
tick,
me
tick,
to
tick,
answer
tick.
That?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I believe that in 1952, her name was Tokyo Rose, right? I mean, Tomoya Kawakatita. I don't know how to say her last name.
Let's just say Tokyo Rose, right?
Yeah.
And there was one more.
And okay. She was actually sentenced to death, by the way. But John Kennedy sent her back to Japan and got rid of her sentence.
And you know what? Who was the gal? What was the gal's radio name in the European theater of war during World War II? You remember?
I don't know. Was that the Axis Sally?
Axis Sally.
Okay.
Okay. And I think were they not the two last people that were convicted of treason?
Well,
in the
Axis
United
Sally,
States?
Which was Mildred Gillars, she was convicted in 1949, and she's only served 12 years of a 10 to 30 year prison sentence. But Tokyo Rose was released, like I said, by John F. Kennedy and sent back to Japan.
That's right. And just to engage in the further coffee conversation, I would tell you that what those ladies did is that I believe they were originally, they had become American citizens or already were American citizens, and then went over to the Axis and also Imperial Japan and became radio announcers every single day. And it was a propaganda airwaves that spoke English. So we had a Japanese radio station that was from Tokyo. That's why she was called Tokyo Rose. And she spoke perfect English because she had been an American citizen. And she would give out propaganda, but they play really good music. Both, Axis Sally did that in the European Theater of War. They spoke excellent English because they were American citizens, but they played great music. So in those days, you know, they were playing, they didn't have rock and roll music, but they were big band music,
yeah.
And all of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they wanted they wanted our soldiers to listen to the radio program, and it always had, you know, more powerful radio than we had. So we'd listen to it, and then at the same time, they'd give out all this horrible propaganda to try to, you know, depress the morale of the American soldiers in both theater wars. Anyways, just a little history about radio.
Okay, well, we've had enough constitutional lessons for today. But
well, you know, that was kind of fun.
It is kind of fun. And you know what? There's lots more questions, and I enjoy them because it really makes me remember, you know, our Constitution, which I don't study every day. So I like doing it. But you know what else is interesting? Over the last number of years, there's been a lot of new words added to the dictionary and things that were not there 20 years ago. So I want to mention some of those, and we can see if we know what they mean.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so the first one is blog.
Okay, well, I have a blog. So the Dr. Ron blog. So that's a means of using social media to communicate internationally.
Exactly, and it was short for weblog, and they made it blog, and there you go. And
boy,
now
if you would have asked me that question, I wouldn't have known the answer to that, because I only knew it as blog.
Yeah, well, so another word added in the last 20 years is one we use every day is Google. Google was not a word in the dictionary 20 years ago.
Now, does Google come from something, or is it just the name of the company?
Well, I don't think it started. I'm not sure if it started as the name of the company. It came in 1998, a mailing list from Google co-founder Larry Page. So I guess it did have to do with Google. It was, that's it.
Okay.
And now it's commonplace to Google everything. Mashup. Do you know what a mashup is?
I don't know what a mashup is.
Well, it's combining songs. You know, so putting a few songs together and making a mashup. So DJs tend to do that a lot.
Oh, okay.
And that's a new word in the dictionary in the last 20 years.
Okay.
I know you know this one. Bromance.
Bromance. That is a liking or a resonance between two guys.
Yep.
Like two BBFs, right? Or BFFs, right? Best friends forever.
best guy friends, yeah. Supercut. Now, I would have one meaning for this, but it actually has another meaning. I'm thinking of the Supercuts haircut store.
That's what I was thinking. Okay.
But it's actually a compilation of a large number of short video clips, which they put all together. And that's what a supercut is. Cyberstalking.
Oh, I know what cyberstalking is. That's where you're tracking someone down on the internet and you're having contacts with them and they don't want to have contacts with you. Cyberstalking.
Yep. And another word that people use now is omnishambles. And that's a combination of two words, omni, which means all, and shambles. So it kind of means a cluster, you know, a big mess.
Well, I didn't know that, so I'm glad you were able to define that for me. And can we find those in the dictionary now?
They are in the dictionary now.
Okay.
And paywall. So when you go onto a website and you need to pay to be able to get the information, then you've hit a paywall.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Good to know.
And the last one is muggle. This may have started out in the Harry Potter books to refer to non-magical people, but now it's become a blanket term for someone who's not conversant in a particular set of skills or a particular activity. So if you're muggling, it means that you're not very good at what you're doing.
Kind of like me with electronics.
Yeah, you muggle in the
You'll
electronics
world. You'll
set
your hair on fire. Don't put that plug in there.
Well, that's my words for the evening. I think it's time for me to hit the hay.
Okay.
Time
well,
for us to
that.
Hit the hay.
I like the constitutional quiz tonight. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, I have a lot more where that came from.
Well, let's come back for another coffee conversation and I'll turn things around on you next time.
Okay.